as this memorable broadcast from the Pissgarten Olympic Auditorium in Hochstaffel, Bavaria, a blistering day in August 1932. 23. The exciting scene of the first famous sports broadcast, the Schmeling Herring Fist Fest.
I'm in the back of this great big auditorium where these great big white man and great big black man are training a tremendous series of great big punches. Oh, and Herring's down in the sauce. The white man is down, and the German is up, and they're raining terrific blows on the black man. Now they're pummeling the gypsies and the Jews. Oh, band of brothers! And here comes the Spanish air farce. Oh, it looks like a rehearsal for the final solution. Oh, those Spanish flyboys are so sexy. Schmeling is circling, but now the referee, a feisty little fellow with a funny-looking mustache, he's stopping the fight. He's raising his right arm in a stiff salute for silence. Oh. Everyone in the hall is doing the duck. I mean, doing the same. I think they're all asking to leave the room. So it appears from Pissgarten Hall that round one goes to the Jerrys.
Did you realize that back in, I guess, about 1788, there was a vote that went down in the United States of America to determine the national language, and that German lost by one vote from becoming the national language of this country? Thank goodness that we haven't had the Schmitz, and we don't write for the Schnitz.
I'm glad we don't speak German. I like American.
Yeah, even though some of the language that Agnew is speaking these days translates very well into German, if you've
Agnew.
Noticed. Yeah.
Agnew is
that's a pain
name.
In Agnew. You suffer from the ague and the ague.
But
here's another little interesting article from Awake, Awake magazine here.
Oh, that's the magazine of Irish death.
Yeah. The American journalist historian William Shearer, during a recent interview, said, I can't do his voice, so you have to just pretend that this is him. We might be the first people to go fascist by the democratic vote. And that would be something not even the Germans or the Italians did. He was speaking of America. He said, Hitler never got more than 39% of the vote in a free election. But I think the American people now would vote for almost anything which would put down the so-called peaceniks and the college kids and the blacks. If our affluent society turned into one of hardship, he said, I think you'd get, by the consent of the people, a very right-wing society and government in which freedom would be greatly restricted. It would be a sort of dictatorship by approval. The author said he'd been astounded that the Germans would give up what might be said to be the equivalent of the American Bill of Rights in return for the law and order that Hitler promised. Now I'm astounded that an awful lot of middle-of-the-road Americans would give up a lot of the guarantees of the Bill of Rights in return for the promise of law and order.
I have a little secret for you.
Yeah, and for that.
Look, it's not that
severe. I'll vote.
No.
I'm twice.
I'm not favorably impressed by all you college-trained students who want to use the idea of the 30th in Germany now. It doesn't hold up, and it's intellectually dishonest.
Oh, you mean, I would agree with that. When little Johnny or little Mary takes his first puff of reefer, or of yeed, as we call it, he doesn't know that he's ingesting 2-3 micrograms of he does, little Johnny, little Mary, they don't know that the plant, you see, is just a carrier for the active element, which is I had to say it though.
I'm shocked that you should use a name like that to try and make a point in an otherwise civilized discussion.
How about this point then? You got both of them. How did you do that, Hans?
They're both on the same microphone.
Oh,
that's terrible.
Very clever fixing.
I just aimed for the RCA.
Got them right in the ohm.
Yeah, give me back. We're going to do a reading of this. David and I are going to do a reading.
You want to do that now or later?
No.
Now,
we'll do it later.
Affecting voices like this to try and give the feeling that this is a fascist country is intellectually robbery. It's piracy. I will quote the facts.
Yeah.
We have not given away the Bill of Rights.
No.
We have voted away the Bill of Rights in order to obtain a certain measure of peace.
Yeah, tranquility.
Certain piece of peace, tranquility.
Foot-long peace, we call it.
Foot-long peace.
Swell piece of pizza.
Swell pizza,
Yeah.
We took that. That cost us eight. Bill writes three and
Excuse
Bill
Excuse me,
eight.
Please. Would,
eight
you,
billion.
Would you hand me one of those hamburgers, please?
Oh, sure.
Oh, thank you. This is named, after Hamburg, a small town in Connecticut.
Well, you sure you wouldn't want a frankfurter?
No, have you got any of that American knackwurst?
Some of that stuff. After the school of hard knackwurst.
It's California. Out in my Toyota.
Right. Yeah, your Toyota?
Yeah.
Oh, Joe, you German too, huh?
Oh, yeah.
How come you disguise your voice?
Oh, I go to a famous comedian school.
Oh, that'd be funny.
And I learn how to do other voices,
Joe. You're pretty funny. You're making me laugh.
Oh, yeah.
Can I read my poem about Donald Trump?
Go. You mean Donald Trump?
Trump? It would be meaningful and yet stupid at the same time. I'd be happy to.
That's right up my alley.
I thought it was
where we are.
Okay.
You're talking about Donald Comeover.
Well,
right?
It's my opinion of all these guys is they're garden gnomes, okay?
Garden gnome.
So this is Donald Gnome the First. You can see him with things. Okay. Of all the garden gnomes we've got, Donald Trump's the lot.
What do you see now, Hunter Thompson, Hunter S. Thompson? Now the book is finished, now your experience has ended as a quasi-member of the Angels, Hell's Angels.
What do I see for the Angels? Or for
what do you see
society?
For us, for everything?
Well, that's... Christ, that's bad. I mean, I don't see much... I'm not really very optimistic, but I think one of the most important things is to recognize that we do have this mounting violence in us, and then to find the reasons, and once you find that, it's like curing a boil, you know. And if people insist on saying I am a very gentle person and only these, you know, that little back gang of hoodlums over there is ugly and mean, then it's just putting off the recognition of that the same venom that the Angels are spewing around in public, a lot of people are just keeping bottled up in private, and the same venom we're spewing all over Vietnam with napalm, that sort of thing. I think if we see this violence that's building up in the country, I'm not saying it's just starting to build up. I think it's been here all along. But I think this technological kind of the science of obsolescence, or the fact that people are becoming obsolete, more and more from the lower classes up, who are less capable of other people who might have some knowledge of, you know, what makes them
tick. The computer, say.
Well, no, because a lot of people are capable of seeing this in them and kind of controlling it. You know, I'm getting to that point now where I don't leap up in a bar and throw a beer bottle across the place and pick up a stool anymore and that sort of thing, or throw a bag of lime into a tavern. But the people who are most affected by this technological obsolescence are the ones least capable of understanding the reasons for it. So the venom builds up much quicker. It feeds on their ignorance. And until we can... Actually, it's a question of education. Until you recognize what's happening, you know, what makes you do these wild things. First, I used to throw beer bottles into bar mirrors and stuff like that and get stomped always. I can't remember ever winning a fight. But I don't do it anymore because I kind of, you know, I've finally caught on to what was happening. And I think unless everybody from Johnson on down at least sees it. Once you see it, you can either say yes or no. Okay, I'm violent, and I'm going to be even meaner, like the guy who was the semi-muscle man. But until you recognize it, it's like a albatross around your neck.
So it's come to the question of recognition, doesn't it? The shock of recognition, or as Wright Morris puts it, the recognition of shock. He's talking about Mara Sad. We come back to Hunter Thompson's book. Just to keep the record straight, we know there are young, we know there are a minority of the young, the prophetic minority, Jack Newfield calls them, who think our values must be reassessed, look at it their way.
Now, the Angels don't understand that.
No.
They wouldn't agree with Newfield at all.
No, of course not.
You can't lump the Angels with the New Left.
Oh, no, I was saying exactly the opposite.
I thought you were...
No, I meant we have, on the opposite, you have a minority
of
the young kids who see something crazy and cockeyed and trying that way. And you might say, to the other extreme, we have the Hell's Angels.
Yeah, they're the new right, which is terrifying, really, because you can imagine if 100 angels can cause this much trouble, what 10,000 could? And there are 10,000 potentials everywhere you look.
And perhaps just before we say goodbye to Hunter Thompson now, and the book that I strongly suggest, Hell's Angels, Hunter S. Thompson, the writer, Random House, the publisher. It's more than a question of, quite obviously more than ideology, which in itself might be obsolete, neither left nor right, the phrases, but the recognition of what our society is, what it can become, both affirmatively and negatively, and the forces at work. But above all, I think Hunter Thompson is telling us to take a look in the mirror and recognize ourselves, and then perhaps there may be a cure.
Yeah, I learned a lot about myself just writing about the angels.
You learn about yourself, you say?
Yeah, I'm much less aggressive and violent than I used to be. I was looking in the mirror, in a way. That's one of the reasons the book was so fascinating, why I enjoyed writing it. I was seeing a very ugly side of myself a lot of times. So, as I say, I've become a professional coward now. That's easier.
We were small, angry men with hairy faces and burning feet. We were running away from poverty, intolerance, and the law
army. And the army.
And we took to them.
And they took to us.
And what do you think they took?
Oil from Canada, gold from Mexico.
The former president of Mexico, Vicente Fox, he said today, and I'm quoting him, he said, "I'm not going to pay for that, quote, effing wall." So if you don't get an actual check from the Mexican government for $8 or $10 or $12 billion, whatever it will cost, how are you going to make them pay for the wall?
I will. And the wall just got 10 feet taller, believe me. Just got 10 feet taller. I saw him make that, I saw him make the statement. I saw him use the word that he used. I can only tell you, if I would have used even half of that word, it would have been national scandal. This guy used a filthy, disgusting word on television, and he should be ashamed of himself, and he should apologize, okay? Number one. Number two, we have a trade deficit with Mexico of $58 billion a year. And that doesn't include all the drugs that are pouring across and destroying our country. We're gonna make them pay for that wall. Now, the wall is $10 billion to $12 billion if I do it. If these guys do it, it'll end up costing $200 billion.
Geese from the neighbor's backyard, boom, boom. Corn from the Indians, tobacco from the Indians, Dakota from the Indians, New Jersey from the Indians, New Hampshire from the Indians, New England from the Indians, New Delhi from the Indians.
Indonesia for the Indonesians!
Yes, Veterans Day.
But we couldn't do it alone.
Now we needed the hope, the faith, the prayers, the fears.
The sweat, the pain, the boils, the tears.
The broken bones.
The broken homes.
The total degradation of...
Who?
You, the little guy.
His pointy hat he's combed straight back to point up his steely brow. His taste in gold is bold as brass, so gnome of the moment. He's a moment again, right? He's back again?
It's a metaphor, isn't it?
There
the brass
you go.
And the gold. I got
take
it.
Your bow.
I'll take it. There you go.
When more cement gets dumped inside the Donald mold, Donald claims the gnomes are pumped to buy, sell, and be sold.
Yeah.
They're fired on with Vegas schemes. I like this rhyme stuff.
This is good. You're good. Good writers.
This is good writing
good writers.
Here.
Buddhists.
They're
Buddhist
fired.
Writers.
No, no Buddhists.
Jewish
you know.
Writers? Mm. Or is this Goyish enough?
No, it's Goyish enough.
Okay, go.
They're fired on with Vegas schemes, Viagra dreams that make their rowboats grow long and sleek to muscle yachts with lots of busty blondes below.
We does should that, be paid for doing this.
Come on, don't
no.
you think?
Yes.
I'll pay you for that.
Is it good? Okay.
Yeah.
I busty blondes.
Busty blondes below.
Yeah, for of course.
Alliteration gets them every time.
All right. Yes, first you skim the stupid out. Gnomes will vote for a familiar face forever. Then gather round the birther gnomes. They'll leave a TV star.
Yeah.
Whatever.
Even without a birth certificate.
Right. They'll now pluck the greedy gamblers up. Some Mormon gnomes mayhap. Then, oops.
This is sounding like Chaucer. All
your
of a
ratings
I
done.
Had
they're,
to read that.
They're falling. The ratings are falling. Crap. But he's back, which is the only reason I'm reading this.
Well, his hair is back.
Yes. Well, his hair is
back. He is back.
He is back.
He's having...
But
read
he's
it
doing
on.
His thing.
Well, let's
okay.
not break
let
the flow.
Let me finish it. It's like a few more verses. You know, what can I tell you?
A few more verses.
Why don't you sit down here and have a nice fascist
I've
cup of coffee?
I've got to go invade Poland.
You do?
Yeah, you communist.
All Poland. Right, see you later.
Say hello to Mr. Chamberlain.
Yeah, right.
Munich. Well, he sold us.
He looks like... I think that's what they fashioned the penguin after on Batman was Neville Chamberlain.
Poor man.
Is that possible?
And I share.
I've got an umbrella here that'll take care of the little schnifter. Oh, I said it.
Returns and I'm confident that we will enjoy peace in our time.
Yeah. You know what? It would have been very interesting if we'd just let Hitler have what he wanted.
He was a madman.
No, he wasn't a madman.
You couldn't give him Poland, the Czechoslovakia, the Sudetenland, and expect him to be satisfied with those. He had his eyes on Alsace-Lorraine.
That's true.
And she was not in any mood to talk
not
to anybody.
Not in any
then.
Mood to go to the Brechtis Garden and play the eagle with him.
Sweet Lorraine. Sweet Lorraine.
I tell you that.
The big one, Chief?
The big one, Chief. We're going for the big one. We're going up into the Eagle's Roost now. We're going to look out all over Austria.
That's Cliff Robertson in 633 Squadron.
No, I don't know that.
Is it the big one, Chief? Are we getting a crack at Hitler?
There's a tremendous amount of fear and misogyny and, fear of losing dominance is the primary thing that's driving this particular election tonight.
I wish it was a different woman, but I'm glad that there's a possibility that we could have a female in the White House.
Yes, of course. It's wonderful. It would be wonderful if that's the outcome.
I just happen to like her. But anyway, I'm sorry. Go ahead.
But what's so terrifying about this particular situation is that the person that she's running against is a complete fraud and a horrible madman and a demagogue and a Hitlerian figure. And, you know, a dictator, basically, who hates women and who behaves, you know, in the most outrageous and uncouth manner. That's what's so terrifying. It would be okay if she were running against Romney or Bush or some other more conservative figure, you know. But she's running against this renegade who's got this mad rabble following him, who are all these terrified people who are, you know, who want to stay in the past, go back even further into the past, who can't face the diversity of our nation, who can't face the fact that there, you know, are new sexual identities emerging, who can't face the fact that we're part of a global economy, who can't face the fact that religion is no longer the guiding fact of our social existence, and on and on and on. And it's, you know, and should he win, we're all going to be in a very interesting shitstorm, and we're going to have to decide how we're going to deal with it.
Hitler's doctor tells of Führer's outbursts.
Oh, yeah? What's he talking about?
More news about the Schnifter.
Don't say that word! You said it!
Say it again!
Don't!
Okay, an American officer who hunted... No, that's the long-lost girl found in Reich. Cinderella of Leipzig, restored to Yank father. We don't want to hear about that.
No, we don't know.
Tortured, say, three defendants in Greek trial.
Ah! Berchtesgaden, Germany, May 21st, AP. A 59-year-old man who said he was Hitler's personal physician since 1936 declared today, 1945, he gave the Führer injections of glucose and caffeine, sugar and coffee.
Sugar and coffee. What would you like in your veins, Schnifter? I'd like it black.
Stumpa, call me Stumpa.
Stumpa, Stumpa. What would you like in your veins?
Regular shot.
Hey, that's espresso. That'll keep you up all week.
He said his name was Dr. Theodore Morell. He was gravely ill in a hospital, suffering from a stroke. He said was caused when Hitler berated him in a fit of anger on April 21st. I heard officers outside the Führer's door talking excitedly. They said it was that's ridiculous for Hitler to remain in Berlin, and they must force him to go to Berchtesgaden. Dr. Sprungführer of the SS suggested I give him an injection of glucose as a stimulant. He was physically wore out. Mein Führer! You are very tired. I'm going to give you an injection to make you feel better.
Goes into rage.
Despite the fact that Hitler had been receiving injections from Morell for several months, he went into a rage and shouted,
"Do you think I'm crazy? You're trying to give me morphine. You're fired. Get out. Go home and take your medical uniform off. Forget I had anything to do with you."
Morell said he collapsed at Hitler's feet. Later, he recalled waking up in the Führer's bunker. Hitler seemed remorseful and offered to have him removed to a safer place. Morell said he left Berlin the next night for Berchtesgaden.
Keep close to the walls.
I found him in a state of ecstasy. Morell declared he was not an eyewitness to the bombing attempt on Hitler's life. Speaking of bombs, but was one of the first to reach his side.
Somebody's in the bathroom.
I found him in a state of ecstasy. His hair was singed and his face was bleeding. He was sitting and saying over and over,
"Think of it.
think of it, nothing has happened to me. Just think of it.
I was astonished to find his pulse absolutely normal.
Morell said...
Which one of you was the little snifter?
There was nothing to the stories that Hitler chewed rugs.
It grew much worse when he grew pale and quiet and remained that way for several minutes. These scenes were invariably followed by some ruthless order.
Not a rugless order, as has been reported.
Get this rug out of here!
Morell was convinced, he said, that Hitler did not commit suicide.
Don't take drugs, chew rugs.
That's right. Alfombra. Yeah, right. Tired of chewing the carpet, friends? Come on up to the tops. Hi, here's Mr. Moda.
Are you guys aware that Donald Trump was elected? I still find it hard to say. El presidente of the Los Estados Unidos on Kristallnacht. On Kristallnacht?
On the night.
On the night that the Jews were, you know, assaulted by the Nazis all over Germany. That night was the night that this bastard was elected to lead our benighted nation.
Darkly ironic.
So come on, what is it all about, you know?
Le jeu, oh, Peter wrote this. Les jeux sont faits. The Jews are done.
Turn them over.
Put another Yekel in. Yekel?
But in 1934, in Germany, the specter of doom was rising its shrouded head in agony.
Das ist immer ein Auto, und ich rauf mir einen Putzen Volkswagen, und niemand steht von Schwellpizza!
Sit down, Lurleen. This may be rough. Honey?
Yes?
The President of the United States is named Schickel Gruber.
I'm going out there, Maury! Help me into this parachute!
No, no, honey, you can't go out there. It's too late,
Sit
I'm telling
me up.
You.
It's no. never too late, Maury. I'm going out there because I'm bringing the war back home!
Off those gnomes have gone to look at someone new, 'cause in our house of garden gnomes they'll find more faithful solid plaster gnomes, red, white, and blue.
Good rhyme.
New and blue?
New and blue. Normally,
good.
You're a lot
new
more
and that blue good.
Is a good rhyme?
Well, good and wood?
I mean, you're big into feminine rhyming.
Is that the end? Because I'm running out of
No,
plan.
I'm not.
Okay.
Yes,
yet.
You are. You're an idiosyncratic
let's see, there's...
feminine rhymist. You know, this is good. This
okay.
is good. I like
this
that.
This is good. Okay, well, let's finish it then. Is somebody else in this room whistling? Or is it just
no, just me. I'm just whistling.
Well, you're on echo.
Yeah, I know, but
well,
that's because
depressing.
I'm whistling in my head.
It's depressing. Go, go.
And now the pointy-hatted garden guys are governors of garden gnomish states and sit on plushy Senate seats, freshly painted, party-ready with their mates. Those cutesy garden gals painted plaster to the core on lawns from Gnome, Alaska, to the plains of Oklahoma.
This is turning me on, man.
Well, I'm glad.
Yeah,
they're
I mean...
frankly more seductive, Pete. Much more than you, Don. So thanks a lot for April Fools. Now back to the B-list gnomes you like to push around. You know, a garden gnome on a penthouse lawn. Garden grow. Of all, this is a chorus.
Oh, there's a chorus.
Of all the garden gnomes we've got, Donald trumps the lot.
The war is over! The brutal industrial gnome has been defeated by the gentlemanly agricultural South!
Ah, see? Oh, bet you didn't know the South won the Civil War.
Left,
this is Daddy.
Daddy.
No true Mississippi cowhard would leave his wine cellar undefended in such a dangerous time.
Germany was having trouble, what a sad, sad story. Needed a new leader to restore its former glory. Where, oh, where was he?
Where could that man be?
We looked around, and then we found the man for you and me. And now it's
springtime for Hitler and Germany. Deutschland is happy and gay.
We're marching to a faster pace.
comes the master race. Springtime for Hitler and Germany. Winter for Poland and France. Springtime for Hitler and Germany. Come on, Germans, go into your dance.
I was born in Dusseldorf, and that is why they call me Rolf.
Be stupid, be a smarty. Come and join the Nazi party.
Workers, of the working class in this election, of Trump's supposed appeal to white workers. And Harry, you know that the civil rights movement, as it was growing and developing, needed and was fueled as well by progressive unions like 1199 and the auto workers and others that gave it strength and organization and resources. I'm wondering how you're looking at this issue, because, Noam, as you mentioned, all the young people, the problem is that the young people, the so-called creative classes, are increasingly concentrating in the big cities. They're in Seattle, and they're in Chicago, and they're in New York, and then the issue then is what happens in the rest of the country. You know, back in the 60s and 70s, we used to say you got to go back out and organize, organize in the communities from which you came from. How do you see this whole analysis of the, quote, loss of the working class to sort of progressive politics that we're hearing in the commercial and the corporate press?
Well, take a look again at the last few elections. Many of the Trump voters among the white working class voted for Obama. They were deluded by the slogans of the campaign. You may recall that the 2008 campaign was based on the slogan, hope and change. Well, many people voted rightly for hope and change. The working class has suffered not disastrously, but severely from the neoliberal policies of the past generation, pretty much from 1979. So if you look, say, just take the 2007, the peak of what economists were calling the economic miracle, right before the crash. 2007, American workers had real wages lower, considerably lower, than in 1979, before these policies were instituted. They lost, listen to Alan Greenspan, who during the height of the euphoria over the economy was called St. Alan, you know, the greatest economist of all time. He testified to Congress explaining the basis for the success of the economy that he was running. He said it was based on growing worker insecurity. Growing worker insecurity, meaning if workers are beaten down enough and intimidated enough, and if their organizations, their unions, are sufficiently destroyed that they can't ask for higher wages and for decent benefits, then it's good for the economy. Creates a healthy economy by some measure. We know the measure. Well, all of this has happened, and the working class has suffered from it. They had a real need for hope and change. Well, they didn't get hope and they didn't get change. I don't usually agree with Sarah Palin, but I think she nailed it when she asked at one point, where's all this hopey changey business? Well, you know, there wasn't any. So no hope, no change. Already, it showed very quickly in midterm and future elections. This election, a con man came along and is offering hope and change, and they're voting for it. Suppose that people like you, the people who formed the Sanders movement, would present an authentic, constructive program for real hope and change. It would win these people back. I think many of the Trump voters. Many of the Trump voters could have voted for Sanders if there had been the right kind of activism and organization. And those are possibilities. It's been done in the past under much harsher circumstances. Organizing white working people in Indiana is a lot easier than what the Freedom Riders tried to do in the South 60 years ago. Much easier. Takes work, but it can be done. And my feeling is that a core part of a progressive program is to rebuild the organized structure of the labor movement, which all throughout modern history has been in the forefront of progressive change. And that's not impossible either. It's been beaten down pretty severely in the past generation, but it's been worse before. If you go back to the 1920s, a period which is not unlike today in many ways, the Gilded Age, you know, the labor movement was virtually destroyed. Woodrow Wilson's Red Scare practically wiped it out. There had been a militant activist labor movement. There was almost nothing left of it in the 1920s. By the 1930s, it revived. Militant labor action, organization of the CIO, overcame racist conflicts, laid the basis for the New Deal programs, which were highly beneficial. To the extent that they remain beneficial. That can happen again. No reason why it can't.
Take heart, dear friends. We are passing through the darkening of the light. We're going to make it, and we're going to make it together. Don't get ground down by cynicism. Don't let depression darken the glass through which you look. This is a garden we live in, a garden seeded with unconditional love. And the tears of the oppressed, and the tears of the frustrated, and the tears of the good will spring those seeds. The flag has been waved. It says occupy. Occupy Wall Street. Occupy the banks. Occupy the nursing homes. Occupy Congress. Occupy the big law offices. Occupy the lobbyists. Occupy yourself. Because that's where it all comes together. I pledge to you, from this moment on, whatever it means, I'm going to occupy myself. I love you. See you tomorrow.